I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Vibes are up on the best day of the week, man. He's James, I'm Kyle. No Joe Brazil today, but Joe going to be back with us tomorrow, and then sounds like maybe the next day, and the next day, and the next
forever,
day.
Forever, never, amen.
And the next day. Salute to our guy, Joe Brazil. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we're hanging out with you till noon. Look, here's the deal. So the Kings won last night, obviously. If you were listening to this program, hopefully you know that. 118-101 the final, and we'll get to it. The NBA Sentinel drama last night was great theater. So if you're unfamiliar, there's a parody account on Twitter. So that, well, hang on, pause that. There's a aggregation account on Twitter called Dunk Central.
Okay.
The NBA Central. And a fake account parodying that account.
Okay.
Called NBA Sentel, C-E-N-T-E-L, gets people all the time. They post fake stories. National people will retweet it, thinking that it's Dunk Central aggregating something legit.
Of course.
So NBA Sentel got... the last time I got by Sentel was the Luka Doncic jersey story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Colin Cowherd got by this one. Basically, it's a fake story that said the Mavs weren't letting Mavs fans wear Luka jerseys into the arena anymore. And they were going to turn those people away because they're trying to move forward from the Luka era. And I sent that to a friend, and then immediately after sending it, was like, nope, got sent. Dang it. So anyways, that account got suspended from Twitter.
Yeah.
And I don't know what started it. But, like, the Kings tweeted hashtag RIP Sentel and then dedicated the beam lighting from last night to Sentel. The Pistons did the same thing. My Pistons, by the way, smoking the Boston Celtics.
Are they up to 8 in a row?
Yes.
8 in a row.
117-97, I think the final was.
Hottest team in basketball.
Cooking, bro. See a Asar Thompson put Jason Tatum on skates?
Uh-oh.
Come on. Let's go, boys. Anyways. So all these teams, like, tweeted about it. Stephen A. Smith tweeted about it. It was confirmed this morning that NBA Sentel is back on Twitter. They've done it. It was big time. Elsewhere in non-Kings news, real quick off the top, the media drama at the NFL Combine is the most fascinating part of the NFL Combine.
It's amazing.
I am having... First of all, Mike Florio wrote about this at Pro Football Talk. If you want to read a masterclass in blogging about an unserious thing, go read Mike Florio's story in Pro Football Talk on this. But here's the gist of it. Jordan Schultz.
Yes.
Heir to the Starbucks fortune.
I had no idea that he was Howard Schultz's son.
Yes, dude. This random NFL insider who has worked for, like, Bleacher Report and Fox... And the score,
he usually has like good stuff.
Yeah. When he reports something, I'm like, oh, okay, that's a thing. Like, he's legit. I just always forget. I think he's at Fox Sports now. I'm pretty sure he's at Fox Sports now. He reported yesterday that Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford met at Tom Brady's house in Montana. Ian Rappaport later reported that they didn't meet at Tom Brady's house. They just happened to both be in Montana and ran into each other and, like, exchanged pleasantries, had a little chat, and then went their separate ways.
Okay. I often am in Montana, and sometimes I bump into other media members that I, you know, don't normally see. So, you know, like when you're in Montana, sometimes you run into Woj.
Yeah, dude.
I don't know. Just,
that's how it goes, man.
It is.
So.
There's like 14 people in Montana. Go ahead.
Who among us has not been gallivanting around Montana and run into a famous person?
That's right.
I'm trying to find, because the story now eludes me. I want to read this directly. Here we go. The headline is Jordan Schultz verbally accosted Ian Rappaport at a Starbucks in Indianapolis. Not just any Starbucks, though. The Starbucks inside the JW Marriott in Indianapolis, where like all the stuff is.
Where the Combine is.
I don't think the Combine is at there, but
it's probably the media hotel.
Right.
Yeah.
This is according again to Pro Football Talk. We're told that Rappaport, again, because Rappaport sort of refuted Schultz's report. We're told that Rappaport was talking to an agent. Schultz approached Rappaport and said, "We need to talk." Rappaport replied, "We don't need to talk," which is an incredible response in itself.
Of course.
Schultz then made accusations about Rappaport, we're told. Rappaport regards the accusations as unfounded. The two men were essentially face-to-face. Quote, "If you have anything to say to me, say it to my effing face," Schultz said, or specific words to that effect. "If this continues, we're going to have an effing problem." Schultz said he did not use profanity. But Ian Rappaport calls security, NFL security, because he saw this as a physical threat.
Mm.
And so now the NFL is investigating Jordan Schultz for accosting Ian Rappaport at a Starbucks at the JW Marriott in Indianapolis. NFL insider drama, baby.
That's awesome.
Incredible. What a jerk.
Yeah.
What an ass. This does not make Jordan Schultz look good.
No.
Whether he's correct or not doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He might be right. In fact, I'm inclined to believe he's right.
I would probably agree with him that he's right. I think he's probably pissed because his integrity is being questioned by Ian Rappaport.
Yes.
And he just, like, he's not down with that.
Yeah, and I get it to an extent, because he's not, like, Jordan Schultz, for as much work as he's done to get to the point he's at, he's not Adam Schefter. He's not Ian Rappaport.
Mm-hmm.
People take what he says credibly.
Yeah, he breaks stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he's not, like, we don't put him in that category.
No.
When we say, hey, who's going to break this major news? We used to say it's going to be Woj or Shams. It's going to be Schefter or Rappaport. Nobody's saying it's Jordan Schultz. So I get where he's still like climbing that hill and he's trying to punch up. Mm-hmm. But dog, this is not the way to do it. Let your reporting speak for itself.
I enjoyed reading the play-by-play of it.
It's
because
so good.
It's so good. And as someone who worked for NBC forever, I'm surprised that thing didn't get edited down, because there is a whole lot of not F star.
Oh yeah, no, it spells out the F word
again and again and again.
A lot of times,
yeah. And then to just throw the barb, son of, Starbucks fortune, the Howard Schultz. You're like, whoa, wait, yeah. I did not know that Jordan Schultz was the son of Howard Schultz.
Yeah, the fact that it happened at a Starbucks provides an intriguing coincidence. Schultz,
yes,
is the son of former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz.
Just like, boom, just gonna throw that in there.
Drop that in.
And then the cup, have a nice day, I think it is, the picture of a
just
cup.
Incredible work. It's amazing. Look, I'm not a Mike Florio guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's, I'm not a huge fan.
Okay.
He's very good at what he does. I think he has a lot. He's really smart, especially with like contractual stuff. This was a masterclass in blogging.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to think that if he's in Indianapolis, this was published at 12:53 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay.
So my guess is Mike Florio was enjoying himself quite a bit.
Oh, got it. Got it.
That would be that's my inclination. Again, I don't know. I just wouldn't be shocked if that was the case. So if you'd like to keep up on the latest media drama at the NFL Scouting Combine. Hit Pro Football Talk and read about it.
I'm also thinking he probably sat there and was in the Starbucks and watched it all unfold.
So I don't think he was.
Okay, you just think this
because
this...
if he had seen it, he would have written it right away. Mm. I think this is a thing that was, there was like, it, the story was floating around that like, oh, this thing happened. And I think Mike Florio went to work hitting sources to find details.
Okay.
And found them. And then published them.
It's wild.
Incredible. Amazing. Speaking of incredible and amazing, he's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. The Kings won again last night, 118 to 101. Basically kind of what we said. Can you get a win where you maybe don't win by 40, but just control the game for the most part?
Yeah.
Which I think they did. They're 2-1 through their first three coming out of the break. Keegan Murray scored 20 points. That's big time for our guy, Keegan.
Yeah. Season high 26 points. It's the fourth time this year that he scored 20 or more. And the first time since before Thanksgiving.
November 24th.
His season high came in on opening night, right?
I think so.
I think it was. It was 23 on opening night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hit you early. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think he's going to do it.
Yeah, this was when he had like 12 13. Points.
He had 13. Yep, okay. Yep. It was at halftime. And we, of course, went back and forth with Witty Bander like we do. And then he just kept going. And it was, for me, like the Kings just need him to be that player and to be a refined three-point shooter, someone who, you know, get to put back dunk here and there, somebody who every once in a while takes the ball off the dribble and goes. Like they are a better team when Keegan Murray is rolling.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, he has not been able to be that player this season. And so for me, this is exactly what the Kings needed. It's a huge, huge development for them. But one game does not make a, you know.
So that's it.
Yeah.
That's where, and again, I'm sorry to be a Debbie Downer, but we've said this a million times about Keegan. We have said this. We've been doing this show for the better part of two seasons now.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we been like, wow, what a great game from Keegan. That's the Keegan they need. When he plays like that, they're really hard to beat.
Too many.
So many. It reminds me of was it Mark Twain who had the quote, quitting smoking's easy, I've done it hundreds of times? Like, it's that, that's what, so I see Keegan have this awesome night, and he was excellent on mm-hmm. both ends of the court. I'm not trying to take that away. It's just like, I know he can do that. My concern was not, hey, is Keegan Murray capable of scoring 20? Like, no, we know he is.
Yeah.
We know Keegan can go do this. We know that Keegan is a good enough offensive player that when he goes and takes, I think, 16 shots, the second most shots he's taken in a game this season, when he goes and takes, it's like, yeah, that's kind of what he should be doing on a night-in, night-out basis. My question with Keegan is not the ceiling. My question with Keegan is, can I get that every night?
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge problem. And I'll continue to say this. The Kings didn't do him any favors at all this season. Because this is a kid who is in his, like, he's extension eligible this summer. They did not do him any favors. Adding DeMar DeRozan as opposed to anyone else, like a Cam Johnson type, mm-hmm. just really took away opportunities. When they made the move to put Malik Monk into the starting lineup, just took away more opportunities. He went from a guy who was potentially your third leading scorer coming into this season, and you pushed him all the way down to 12 points a game. And I don't think that it was intentionally, although it's not like this franchise hasn't done that in the past.
Sure.
But it was the byproduct of the acquisitions that they made and the byproduct of promises that may have been made to Malik Monk. And at the end of the day, Keegan Murray just kept dropping down the pecking order. And that's just a really tough thing for a young player, especially a young player who, you know, averaged 15 points a game last season. He was on the rise.
Yep.
And then
he
all
didn't
of a sudden,
shoot it as well from three, but I mean, just offensively last year, you saw him expand the bag a little bit, and you went, "Oh, at some point he's going to start hitting threes again."
Well, that, and at some point we thought he'd start taking guys off the dribble a little bit more. We thought we would see more of the development, right?
Yeah.
And then to just have like the rug ripped out from underneath you as far as a player and as far as who you are and where you fit into a system, it's tough. You know, we talked like the weird gardening metaphor we used yesterday.
That's strong. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think we did that at the break, but it's like you have to understand, like, when you're gardening, that there are certain things that go together and certain mm-hmm. things that don't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, they're like a tomato plant has to have nitrogen. It, like, it sucks the mm-hmm. earth dry of all the nitrogen. And so you put basil around it. They, number one, they don't like eat nitrogen the same way, but also they help replenish the ground and they keep bugs away.
Sure.
And so there are different plants that work with different things. And it's very similar in basketball. Like mm-hmm. you can't just randomly throw a bunch of things out there and think that everyone is going to grow and everyone's going to prosper in the same way. And in all honesty, the roster creation this season has hampered the development of Keegan Murray.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would be this dramatic. And I also thought that there would be this point where DeMar DeRozan was way up here and Keegan Murray was here.
Yep.
And we would start seeing this shift mm-hmm. and where DeMar started to, you know, age.
Take more of a backseat.
Yeah, take more of a secondary role and mm-hmm. Keegan would elevate. Keegan just became an afterthought this entire season. Like he, of all the drama, of all the things that have happened this season, he's kind of skated by because he's the one that didn't take the leap offensively that everyone thought. And mm-hmm. and again, I'm not blaming him 100%. He needs to shoot the ball better and stuff like that, but he also needs the opportunity. He needs to be in rhythm. I really do think that this is probably, when we get done with this season, one of the biggest true disappointments of this season will be the lack of development of Keegan Murray.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and that's with you trading De'Aaron Fox, that's with you firing Mike Brown, that's with all of the other things that have happened. One of the biggest disappointments of the season is that he hasn't been able to elevate. And hopefully this is, maybe this is a moment where he starts to.
He took 10 threes last night, tied for his most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's only done that twice. He's taken double-digit threes twice. And no coincidence, they're the two highest scoring games of his season as well. So it's like, this is that's great that we saw it for one night, but I don't need to see a Keegan cook for one night. Before,
no.
I need this on a little bit more regular basis before I start to get excited about it. So it helped them win last night, 118-101. They took care of business. They're 2-1 through their first three out of the All-Star break. I think you probably take that, but we'll dig into that. We'll dig into plenty of other stuff from last night. John Lynch spoke at the Combine. We'll talk about that. And I have a question about the Kings that we'll get to as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, and that is Sacramento Sports Leader.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
What did Shams say?
Shams right now is reporting that New York center Ariel Hakpati has suffered a torn meniscus in his left knee and expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. I've never heard of that person at
all.
If I were to put on a list of names and put up Ariel...
It's, how do you spell this?
H-U-K.
Oh, okay.
P-O-R-T-I.
Oh, okay.
If you would have said this is a real person, I would have said erroneous.
Hails from Stralsund, Germany.
Okay.
As one does. Second round pick in this year's draft. He's played in 25 games for the Knicks this year. So this knee injury that has him out 4 to 6 weeks... He will not be eligible for All-NBA.
Oh, that's true.
That's tough. He's playing less than 9 minutes a night and averaging 2 points and two boards.
Yeah, it's my bad. I had no idea that this person actually existed. 7-footer, 246 pounds.
Averaging 8 and 8.5 per 36.
I wonder if he's German or if he's because his parents were in the military,
right,
and he was born in Germany.
I have no idea. I could not even begin to tell you because I didn't know this person existed until 40 seconds ago.
I also did not know he existed either. He was a two-way
player. I wonder why Shams tweets that. Like you said, this is not, it's not, so he started for the Knicks against Philly and played 16 minutes. He played 19 minutes against Cleveland in a blowout loss and played 17 against Chicago the night, or their previous game in a overtime win. But it's not like he was a regular rotation piece before that. Do you think it's like an agent favor? Just getting his name out there?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, to me, that's odd. Either way, like, hopefully he's all right. I mean,
yeah, fingers crossed.
Especially for a young player.
Yep. Yeah, fingers crossed he's okay. And maybe he'll come back and he'll be a factor in the playoffs. That's certainly the hope. Getting back to the Kings, I want to talk about some of the games that happened last night around the league that had an impact on the Kings. But I'm trying to help me here. I did not walk away from last night. I was not moved. The Charlotte game, I watched that and went, okay, there's that. I didn't see anything last night that made me feel like, okay, there's, and it's not going to happen. Again, this is not a linear thing. It's not just going to be, oh, hey, every game they're going to get a little bit better and that's how it's going to go. So this is not like, oh my God, they're awful. But I just, last night was like, okay, you kind of took care of business. You checked the same box that you'd checked against Charlotte. That's better than not checking it. Okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, now it feels like here's where the rubber is going to actually meet the road over the next 8 games. You needed to win last night, no doubt. But I wasn't moved. These last 2 games might just be those games. I remember in early December where they scored 140 points in back-to-back games against the Spurs and the Jazz.
Oh, yeah.
They beat the Spurs by 27 and then beat the Jazz by 44. And we're like, okay, here they are. The Kings have arrived. And then turns out they hadn't. That's sort of what I'm afraid this is.
I think it's funny because we came into this game thinking that, like, I think I said it, I believed it would be between like an 18 and 20 point.
Yeah, you pretty
win,
much nailed it. Yeah.
Right. And so when you get into that game, if it was 16, it was 17, it was 18.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
They control the game.
Yeah, you control the game. And I think what we're hoping is that they would start cleaning things up, that they would look better here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, they didn't. They were just a much better team. They were just a much better collection of players. And that's what I keep finding. There are games where they just look like 5 dudes who just randomly walked out onto a basketball court. And,
yeah,
you know, and so you're always waiting. Like, again, I think some of the good stuff that we took from the game before, the Hornets game, it's not so much that they won by 40-something. That was really, really like, okay, good. You won by 40-something.
They got to 40 because Zach LaVine went insane in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and the game was, you know, like, either way, they were up 16 going to the fourth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the game was never in doubt. But I think what we liked from that game was that they ran the ball through Domantas Sabonis the whole first half.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game started looking easier and easier and easier. And all of a sudden there was a flow to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things that started to piece together, I just felt like some of that wasn't there in this game. And, you know, again, I like the fact that Keegan Murray had a moment where he stepped up and had his breakout game. And to be honest with you, it might have been intentional. It might have been the Kings saying, hey, tonight we're going to work really hard to get Keegan Murray going because we know we can win this game. But we need him to figure things out, and so we have him for the stretch run here.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was the intent. Let's run more actions for Keegan Murray. That's possible, but I think what stands out to us, to me, to everyone who watched the game, was that Domantas Sabonis just was not very good for a second straight game. And I believe this is only the second time since he joined the Sacramento Kings that he's gone back-to-back games without a double-double.
I certainly don't remember a...
There was one other stretch like 2 years ago where he had 2 games where he did have a double-double. And so it's not that that's the end-all be-all, that Domantas Sabonis has to have a double-double in every game, but it's like he didn't get a double-double because he didn't score in double figures. And that
was 2 nights ago.
Well, last night. Oh,
last
no,
night
you're
he
right.
Got to 12.
You're right. He did get to 12.
Here's what jumps out from last night. And again, you hit the nail on the head there. You say it's not the end-all be-all, and that's correct, but his first half stat line, 4 points, 7 boards, no assists. And then the second half, 8 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists.
They're not repeating the things that are working.
Right, I don't, and again, we're hyper-focusing on Domas here. This is not the only thing that we're taking away from last night, but it's certainly a big one.
Yeah.
And he is their best player, correct?
I certainly think he's their best player.
If you think Zach LaVine is their best player because he's going to put the ball in the hoop more, okay, that's fine. Domas is still extremely important to what they're doing. And I just, you cannot have these stretches and where he's just a non-factor if you're going to reach the heights that you want to reach.
Yeah, and he dropped under 20 points per game last night for the first time in months.
That's crazy.
So over his last 12 games, I know we checked yesterday, his last 11 games, he's averaged 16 points. I'm going to guess he's at 15.5,
mm-hmm.
like 15.4 points per game over his last 11. It's just like you're waiting for this moment where he takes off again, mm-hmm. and he starts to look like himself. And not only that, but Walker Kessler just destroyed him.
He cooked him, dude.
That was crazy. Shocking. Shocking that, you know, Walker Kessler has not played well against Domas throughout his career. And to watch him, that's the problem, is that Domas doesn't look like himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it started in the first play of the game.
Yep.
He got all the way, and he flipped the ball up in the air and, like, missed, and then
he smoked, like, multiple layups last night.
I think he smoked a dunk.
He lost defensively.
Yeah, there's also a moment where early in the game, he went to throw a pass on the baseline to DeMar DeRozan and just, like, threw the ball out of bounds. Like, everything looked weird. They turned the ball over the first three possessions.
It was ugly.
Yeah, although one of them was a team turnover because it was a shot clock violation. Mm. But even the shot clock violation was because Malik Monk was over dribbling and thought somebody kicked it and watched the ball, took 2 seconds to roll out of bounds. And then they had 0.7 on the clock. Like, just the basics of the game, it took them like 4 minutes to score two baskets.
I think that's what's bothering me. Because we asked for them to blow out the Jazz, and that's what they did. They tied the first quarter, they won the next three quarters, and they won the game by 17. There was never really a point after the first quarter that I thought they were going to lose.
Yeah.
So I'm walking this weird line because I'm not trying to discredit what they did last night. But at the same time, if you play like they did in the first 15 minutes of that game against a good team, you're going to be down 15 points.
At least.
At least. And that goes for the game against Charlotte, too. And like you said, it feels like they're winning these games. And this is my concern. And again, they have an 8-game stretch coming up where we're going to learn a lot more about them and where exactly they are on this NBA hierarchy. Because if they go 6-2 over those 8 games, we're going to feel a lot different. At least I sure am.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've seen the last couple of nights is, okay, you took care of business. That's great. But I want something to grab onto where I go, this is okay, this is better. This is the thing. This is their identity. This is the thing that's going to catapult them moving forward. I see the vision. I see where they're going. Right now, they're just out-talenting bad teams.
Yes, that's exactly what happened last night. They were just better because the other team decided to sit their three top scorers.
And also, Jordan Clarkson went 1-for-14 from the field.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, surprisingly, they started Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
Where they didn't the night before, or mm-hmm. a couple of games, the 2 days before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that team not only were they resting their top three scorers, they brought they started their fourth scorer in Jordan Clarkson, who couldn't hit anything, and their fifth highest scorer, who averages almost 17 a game, was coming off the bench as well. Like, it was just an odd. It was an odd game because we're expecting them to, like, roll. And they did roll, but there's still some clunkiness to it. And you're hoping that they clear up some of that issue. And mm-hmm. I don't know if they will or not.
So that's where if you're trying to go, hey, I'm optimistic, be optimistic. Okay, well, that's the optimism.
Yeah.
The optimism is they bolt race these two teams, and then instead of sneaking past them like they did against the Pelicans.
Well, that, and I think the optimism is that in one game, Zach LaVine clearly found himself. In the next game, Keegan Murray clearly looked like the mm-hmm. Keegan Murray that we've seen at least part of the time last year and mm-hmm. a bunch of times in this rookie season. He looked more like the player yep. we expect.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean 26 points. It means he looked confident. He looked ready. He looked like he was part of the plan.
There weren't massive stretches where I forgot Keegan Murray was playing.
Yes.
That was the difference last night. One of the other things I really liked from last night, again, if we're looking for just little things for reasons for optimism, I loved the shot distribution from the starters.
Mm.
Malik Monk, 12, Domas, 12, DeRozan, 14, Keegan, 16, LaVine, 18. That's more, to me, what it needs to look like instead of Keegan 6, Domas 8.
Yes.
Levine 22. Like, that's... I think the maximized version of the Kings looks more like that statistically, where it's a little more democratic. And then you have Keon Ellis coming off the bench, going 4 of 5. You have Jonas Valanciunas, who was awesome last night, going 6 of 7. He knocked down his only three. Keon continues to stay hot from beyond the arc. He had 3 out of 4. The other thing I'm trying to take away and spin forward is I think they have a really effective bench.
Yeah, it's starting to piece together. And even the fact that Markelle Fultz played, what, like 4 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And Jake LaRavia didn't score again.
Yep.
Jake LaRavia, whether he scores or not, he has a major impact on the game. I know a lot of people were super concerned about whether the Kings were going to be able to retain him or not.
Mm-hmm.
I told everybody, like, look, that will take care of itself. Like, he did not want to be in Memphis, like, at all. It's very clear he did not want to be in Memphis.
Interesting.
But he plays with the same, like, sort of motor that the players from Memphis play with, which I think is something that, like, really helps the Kings.
Big time.
Right now, he's averaging 1.7 points and 2 rebounds, and he's playing 13.3 minutes a game. He's shooting 26% from the field and 18% from three. Like, he hasn't found his offensive game at all or where he belongs. And that, I think you can look at the way his season has gone with the Kings so far and really highlight the fact that a role player doesn't have any idea what his role is except for to hustle. And I think everything that he's doing on the court is great, except for scoring. And it's okay that he doesn't score because the Kings don't need another score. But what you do notice is that there are way too many times where it's like he just doesn't look like the player that he has in the past. And that's because he's trying to find his way. And it really is sort of when I think Jake LaRavia puts together a real game and ends up scoring 12 points or something, that's going to be the game where you're like, oh, okay. The Kings are figuring it out, not Jake LaRavia. The Kings are figuring out like how this group of players works together.
I told you when they signed Jake LaRavia, traded for Jake LaRavia. I told you when they traded for Jake LaRavia that he was going to have a frequent impact outside the box score.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, no points, no rebounds, no assists, 0 for 3 from the field, 0 for 2 from the 3-point line. One turnover, 4 fouls, plus 11.
The game before he didn't score, he was a plus 28.
Dog.
Yeah.
So this is not Jake LaRavia as their most important player.
Nope.
If they got to the playoffs and Doug Christie said, hey, Jake LaRavia is going to play 6 minutes a night, it would make sense when you're shortening the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not... But when I say the bench is coming together, it's stuff like that. It's just this is an impactful player that they have that is taking some of the onus off the starters, whether it's defensively, whether it's making plays offensively. Last night, Keon was knocking down shots and Valanciunas was really, really good. So they didn't need a tertiary scorer on the bench. Just can you continue to have an impact in these other ways? And that's what I think the Kings are missing or have been missing. Just those players who...
Glue guys.
They're gonna affect winning outside of shots and points.
Yes.
And outside of even rebounds and assists. What are the other little things? Hustle plays, tipping out a rebound. There's
the ball where he saves the ball from going out of bounds, flicked it behind his back to Malik Monk, who hits Valanciunas for a hammer.
Yep.
Like that was he saved two points.
Awesome.
He gave them 2 points that were not going to be there.
Yep. Just that, creating possession.
Yeah, and that's what I like. Again, whether the Kings can keep him or not, it just depends on if he wants to stay and if somebody gives him like way more than the $5.1 million the Kings can offer. But I certainly think that we're backing down off of this idea that there's no way they can keep Jake LaRavia. He's gone scoreless in 4 of the last 5 games. And the one game that he did score, he had 3 points. The game before that he had 2. So over his last 6 games, he's got 5 points.
Mm.
But it doesn't matter. Like, what matters is that he's impacting winning.
Yep.
And the same way that Jonas Valanciunas came in last night, what he did to Filipowski was just like, that was tough.
Welcome to the NBA.
He just threw that kid around like a rag doll.
That's one of those things where Kyle Filipowski is going to be on a podcast in 15 years, and he's going to get asked about his welcome to the NBA moment. And he might have a couple other ones. I have not followed the career of Kyle Filipowski super, super close.
Nope.
I've seen him at the Kyle meetings, but haven't really gotten to talk to him. I could see him being like, man, we played this game. I think it was in January or February against the Kings and Jonas Valanciunas. I could see that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what last night looked like.
Yeah, he just got destroyed.
It's tough.
But that's the nice thing about having Jonas. When you have an off night from a player like Domantas Sabonis, mm-hmm. now you have a player. I mean, I also point out, Trey Lyles did not play last night, got a DNP CD, and he was a did-not-play coach's decision in the previous game in the first half, and then came in and scored like 8 points.
DNP Christie's decision?
Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is. Christie's decision.
DNP yeah. DCD did not play Doug Christie's decision.
That's right.
Yeah. Sorry. Keep going.
They realistically had an 8-man rotation last night with a little bit of Markelle Fultz.
A smattering of Markelle
Fultz. Yeah. A tiny, tiny, small
sprinkle
smattering.
Of Fultz.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think that's their best 8 dudes who played last night. And they were, like I said, the bench was really good. The starters, I love the shot distribution. There's some things they still have to clean up. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. That's why we watch sports.
Yep.
Because if we knew for a fact, it would be way less fun. But I'm not sitting here going, wow, hey, this is the favorite for the 6th seed now because they've won these last 2 games. So that's where I'm standing. Over these next 8, we'll learn a lot. I'm more optimistic now about the next 8 games than I was mm-hmm. prior to the last couple games.
I agree.
So We'll see how that goes. We'll take a look around the NBA scoreboard. And John Lynch talked at the Combine yesterday and addressed basically all of the major things going on with the 49ers. So we'll get into some of that news as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Jiffy Lube sponsors this program, and it's on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James is over there. I'm Kyle. Hey, something I've been meaning to do since Monday, and I keep getting sidetracked, so I'm going to do it right now before we talk about what John Lynch said yesterday. Went downtown with some friends this weekend, and we dropped by Mojo's Local Tap and Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an ad. I just wanted to shout them out because that's a good spot. It's a good indoor-outdoor seating. They have a King's wall. No disrespect to the Applebee's on Arden, but their King's wall at the local at Mojo's Local Tap and Kitchen was significantly better. Tons of TVs, really good beer selection. I think it was like 34 beers on tap, a bunch of them local. The food was really good. So if you're looking for a spot to watch a game, Mojo's Local Tap and Kitchen, salute. We had a good time out there.
I don't think I've been here.
Yeah, it's been a bunch of different stuff. When my friend was describing it to me, it's a few blocks from the arena, walking distance to the arena for sure. But yeah, we just had a really good time sitting there.
Okay. No, it looks nice. I'm looking at pictures. And the food looks wonderful.
Food was good. Beer was good. Vibes were up. Shout out to Mojo's, man.
Nice.
Like I said, not even getting paid for that. Just wanted to shout out a local business. Okay, so John Lynch talked at the Combine yesterday. Said a bunch of stuff regarding all the offseason storylines that we're following. Said the negotiations are underway with Brock Purdy. Talks are in their infancy, but negotiations are underway. I think hopes that anything is going to get done. Matt Barrows wrote about this in The Athletic. I think hopes that something is going to get done soon are out the window.
Yeah, that's weird because if they're in their infancy, that means that like it's going to take 6 months before they learn how to crawl. And then maybe they take steps by 9 months if you're lucky.
I hope it's not that.
Yeah,
no, there's ridiculous. Still, I think the goal would be to get something done before the offseason program starts. But Purdy has been in the building every day. That's what Lynch said. He said he's been around. He's talking to everybody. It's not this weird, hey, I'm soft holding out thing until I get a deal. I think there's mutual interest in getting a contract done.
Mm-hmm.
So I we've talked about this ad nauseum. My concern is way less the dollar amount, because whether it's $100 million guaranteed or $150 million guaranteed, like it's going to be expensive. Like it's going to be tough for the 49ers to retain high-priced players, to sign high-priced players. Like they're just they can't have as top to bottom as expensive of a roster if you're housing a quarterback that's making $55 or $60 million annually, right? But on the other hand, the bigger deal to me, because that's going to be a hurdle regardless of what Purdy makes. The bigger deal to me is just getting it done well before training camp.
Yeah, is he playing on this deal this coming season? It won't supersede his final year of his contract. It won't overwrite the final year.
I doubt they would structure it that way.
They'll probably give him a signing bonus that will help like bring down the price of everything else.
Right.
And, you know, I think we've talked about this. The guaranteed money situation is always going to be the biggest question when it comes to quarterback play, it seems like, because it's so much of the contract. And then what we learned about that through, you know, conversations with our friends in the media world that cover the 49ers, is that they have to put that money in an escrow account.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the, you know, again, Brock Purdy's going to get $100 million plus in guaranteed money. That has to like be like pulled out of one bank account and put into another bank account. So it's there.
Yep.
Right. And that's a lot of money to like lose, like to just have it go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's why they keep doing this. But I don't know. It just feels weird that they always put themselves in a situation where they drag it out. And this isn't one where they should.
Number two.
Okay.
The 49ers are in talks with Talanoa Hufanga and Dre Greenlaw.
Okay.
That's kind of interesting. I don't want to get into the nitty gritty of the 49ers safety situation with you all, because I think it would probably bore everybody to tears. But it looked like Talanoa Hufanga was going to walk, and that's how they've operated. They've drafted safeties in the last 2 years, and it looked like that was going to be. But then Hufanga got hurt twice this year after tearing his ACL. One of those safeties didn't play as well. So I think the door is more open to a Hufanga return than it was going into last season. The interesting thing with Dre Greenlaw, we knew they were going to try and bring him back, but apparently Robert Saleh is like, need him.
Yeah, he's adamant that they need him back.
Yes.
And to be honest with you, I totally agree. Like, because, like, look, over the last, like, two decades, the 49ers always have great linebackers. Whatever, they've done such an incredible job.
Yep.
You know, whether it's Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis or, you know, even before that, you know, the Ken Norton era. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they've had all of these eras of great linebacker play.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have Fred Warner out there without Dre Greenlaw, it's just different. Your whole entire defense is different. Those two together are something like special. Now, Dre Greenlaw has to be healthy, but that doesn't change the fact that like those guys together, like they make you a top five defense most of the time. And I'm not sure that you can get there by bringing in, you know, guys who quit on you late in the season and just some randos thinking that you're going to be able to fill the spot.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe we're wrong. I hope that there's a like a common ground that they can come to, especially Greenlaw coming off like a bunch of injuries and not really like being able to perform at the highest level.
So it's going to be interesting because the Niners signed him to an extension a couple years ago because he had dealt with some injury stuff, and they got him at like bargain basement price. He just wanted some long-term security, and he got it. So it'll be interesting to see. And John Lynch said yesterday they're hoping to get it done before free agency. They want to get a deal done before that. But they would also understand if he wants to go see what's out there and see what his market is so the 49ers can act accordingly. The injury stuff is the only thing, the only question I have with him. If he's going to go get top five linebacker money, all right, go get it then.
No, totally.
And you can hope that one of your younger guys, D. Winters or Tatum Bethune, or maybe you're drafting somebody this year to replace him. Because I agree with you, man. We always talk about the defensive line and their pass rush, but their ability to control the second level in the middle of the field has just been huge because so many modern offenses are built on, hey, get rid of the ball quick, over the middle, easy throws. And when you can take those away and you force the quarterback to get to read two or three or four, that's when your pass rush starts to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And when those linebackers that are that good in coverage are also very good at getting downhill and sideline to sideline, all of a sudden your run defense looks awesome. And you're absolutely right. It's not a coincidence that you removed Dre Greenlaw from the equation last year. You try and plug in 47-year-old Devondre Campbell, who may or may not even like football. And hey, look, your defense is way worse. They got worse at several spots, to be totally sure. But I think that was a big one.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't surprise me at all that Robert Saleh is looking at this and going, man, we need this guy. If we're gonna maximize what we're doing defensively, we need Dre Greenlaw in here.
Yeah, and I agree with him, like 100%. Like, I like that he's like, that's the position that he's taken.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go get me my guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you got to pay him a little bit more, like, he probably deserves a little bit more because of what's happened.
Yeah.
Now, again, if he's going to get top tier money, there's nothing you can do about that.
No doubt.
You know, but he's still a very, very good player.
Speaking of injuries, Brandon Ayuk's injury recovery is going well, according to John Lynch.
Okay.
There's a follow-up test coming soon that I guess, according to Matt Barrows, is going to shape his recovery timeline. So after this follow-up test, whenever that is, I think we'll get a better idea of, do they expect him to be back for training camp? Do they expect him to be back for week one? Then we'll have a better idea. But right now, it's all up in the air. There's not been a setback, which I think is as good as you can do right now, or as good as you can hope for. Like, they're not going to come out on February 27th to be like, yep, he'll be ready for week one. Here we go.
Yeah.
Or sometime before that. Like, they're just not going to put that on it until they know for sure. Okay, now that the healing has happened, now you get into the rest of the recovery.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, too, what they can, because of the history of the ACL tear and the history of the specific injuries that he has outside of the ACL tear in the knee, you can track progress and where someone should get to and where they're at every step and whether they have a setback or not. You can track that, like, so easily now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just watching like range of motion testing and stuff like that I've seen the Kings do, and they start to see when a player is, when things are going wrong, like well before, like predictors.
Mm-hmm.
And you like either pull back or you've got to push through. You got like more weight training or less mm-hmm. weight training, or like, hey, like we don't like what's happening right now. We're going to let it cool down for 3 weeks. I think there's a lot that, you know, we'll learn about what's going on with his knee, but also like, it's so refined now as far as like an injury.
Yeah, for sure. A couple other things real quick. Trent Williams is going to be back. John Lynch confirmed that. And they're hopeful Christian McCaffrey is going to be ready to go for the offseason program, but it doesn't sound like he's going to participate in all of it because they want to make sure he's healthy,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense, but that's going to be a huge question mark because he's 28 going on 29. And he had Achilles and knee injuries last year. So
yeah,
that'll be something to watch moving forward. All right, let's get back into the Kings. Did they get any help yesterday? We'll have more takeaways from yesterday's game. And I have a big Kings question that I think we're going to need to answer here over the next couple of weeks. But before we do that, I didn't have an underdog lineup last night. But I've got one tonight, fresh off my win on what night was it? Tuesday night?
Mm-hmm.
I got a win on Tuesday. Here's the lineup I'm rolling with tonight. No Kings game, obviously. So I'm looking at the Warriors in the Magic game. I'm going Stephen Curry lower than 33.5 points, rebounds, and assists. I think the Magic are really good defensively. They have the kind of length that can bother Steph. Paolo Banchero, I'm going higher than 34.5 points, rebounds, assists, because I don't think the Warriors have a player who can effectively guard Paolo Banchero. So I think he might have a big game. And then Bradley Beal, just 18.5 points for the Suns against the... Standby. I lost track of who the Suns are playing.
Mm.
Here we go. I think it's the Pelicans. Yeah, it's the Pelicans. So Bradley Beal, 18.5 points. It looks like he's back in the starting lineup for the Suns. So I'm going to go Bradley Beal higher than 18.5 points. That's what I'm doing on Underdog's Daily Fantasy, Underdog Pick'em. It is my favorite way to watch sports, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. So join me. Download the Underdog app and sign up now using the promo code KYLEM to unlock a special offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit. Join in on the fun when you sign up with promo code KYLEM. Claim your special offer today and get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly upon first deposit. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. All right, we're diving back into the Kings next. He's James. I'm Kyle. Kyle were the insiders on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.